Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing his column for Real Clear Politics, reviewing for all of us a series of essays written over a great period of time in different directions, but all surrounding the question of democracy and the American Constitution. Peter, a very good evening to you. This is most helpful to have all of this collected. I have not used the links that you provide. I instead have read through your essay introducing each of these essays that all have adjustments from the points of view, their political points of view. I confess to you, Peter, the one I immediately went to, however, to read was Harvard Law School professor Ryan Durfler and Yale Law School professor Samuel Moyne, writing in the New York Times, which I missed until you pointed it out to me. The Constitution is broken and should not be reclaimed. I believe, Peter, that's called a thought experiment or a counterfactual. How do you read this? Is it meant to be provocative, or is it a thoughtful discussion about an 18th century document? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think it's intended actually as more than a thought experiment. I think they are quite serious in their the two claims incorporated in the title. Constitution's broken. It should not be reclaimed. Indeed, in the body of the article, they assert that in order to save democracy in America, we need to reclaim the United States from constitutionalism. We must overcome the Constitution. We must scrap the Constitution. And by the way, that article was published 2 years ago, but over the summer, the New York Times has published a couple additional op-eds, long op-eds, making essentially the same case. Constitution is broken. We need to free ourselves from it. And we need to, well, it's actually never quite clear what we need to do instead. But the implication is some sort of, let's use the phrase, majoritarian democracy, establish some sort of majoritarian democracy.
In other words, this is about the Electoral College. That's what it's about. It's got an elaborate case, but it's that the Electoral College is seen as what? Disorienting the Electoral College. It doesn't have a level playing field.
It's true, the Electoral College does not precisely reflect popular will. What they leave out is, they tend to leave out is, it was not supposed to reflect majority will. It had good reasons for giving various regional interests some protection from majorities, especially majorities concentrated in cities. But the real objection is not a formal objection. The real objection is the Electoral College has been proven to be malignant, because it allowed the election of Donald Trump in 2016 and could allow the election of Donald Trump in 2024.
We move to the question of who is it that enjoys thinking of the Constitution as not applicable. And you note that there is something called the New Right. You've written about this before, Peter. Is it still as vital as it was when you first introduced it to me, or has the campaign replaced it in some fashion, MAGA?
That's a big question. It's not a secret that vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance has had conversations with some of these new conservatives, the new right, Common Good conservatives, national conservatives. Now, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. There's diversity within both camps, national conservatives and Common Good conservatives. But some of their most prominent spokesperson, people like Patrick Deneen, people like Yoram Chazoni, do insist that all of America's major woes in the economic sphere, in the political sphere, in the cultural sphere, in the national security sphere, all these woes can be traced back to America's classical liberalism heritage. Now, that's a problem if you're a conservative, because the U.S. Constitution is steeped in classical liberalism. How much that is going to be, how much that forms J.D. Vance's thinking is unclear. I saw not a hint of it, I must say, in his debate with Tim Walz. And we may well find out in the coming months and years if Trump and Vance are elected a week from tomorrow.
Your recommendation is of a new issue of the New Criterion, the October issue, in which there are a series of thoughtful essays in and around this general topic of the Constitution. So let us begin with the ambition of the magazine's editor, Roger Kimball. What does he want us to take from this issue?
Well, first, I think he wants us to take from this issue the centrality of constitutional government to the well-being of democracy in America. But he also wants us to understand that an extreme view has crystallized on the left. In his assessment, the left has simply been unable to bear the election of Donald Trump in 2016 and the refusal of Trump to stay put after he lost the election of 2020. And so they've now crafted a new indictment against the Constitution itself. It's not just that the Constitution does not give sufficient expression to majority will. It's that this Constitution allows Donald Trump to become president, and any Constitution that so allows must be fundamentally defective.
The opposite is also entertained, if I understand your summary, that departure from the Constitution is an explanation for the ills of the country. Do I read that correctly?
You do read that correctly, and that is a theme that runs through the four main contributions that rather than being rooted in the Constitution's classical liberalism, many of our woes are rooted in our failure to understand the Constitution, understand its operations, understand its goals, and commit ourselves to both conserving the Constitution and effecting reforms within its framework. Yes.
Let's address them then serially. Our Athenian American democracy, this is by your colleague at Hoover, Victor Davis Hanson. We know him very well. He writes passionately. And he's steeped in history. He swims in history. And he's looking at the Athenian democracy. It might be a revelation to people who debate the Constitution to come across the facts of the Athenian democracy. It was clearly in the hands of the well-to-do and the prosperous and those who were given authority in Athens. And it was a majoritarian democracy. Is that well known for those who want to get back to it?
I think it's not well known. And Hanson himself underscores that Athenian democracy, and this is true of the oligarchs as much as the people, had no notion of individual rights. They had no notion that a purpose, if not the highest purpose of the political order, is to preserve the rights all people share, because they had no notion of individual rights. Victor quite rightly points out that rights is something introduced into into Western political discourse shortly after the Middle Ages, but the real source is the biblical view, the Christian view, shared by the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, that all human beings have a basic dignity because all are created in the image of God. That's something new that the Athenians did not, Athenian politics did not know of.
Victor, of course, swings into modern times when he talks about the administrative state, which is generally described as the bureaus of Washington that have their own court system, their own rules, and their own interpretations of laws passed by Congress. Congress long since out of the picture. We have this routinely now. I learned, for example, Peter, this I enjoy. There's a regulation in the state of Connecticut against selling pumpkin pies in public because You need a license to make sure you refrigerate it between events. So here at Halloween, pumpkin pies, you can give them away, but you can't sell them unless you can prove that you, in some fashion, refrigerated them. Now, there probably is a benefit to that, but it does it does describe an administrative state that has taken upon itself to determine how we should live our lives. I do not believe Victor celebrates this, but was it always inevitable that that's what it would come to once we started down the road of constitutionalism, that it would be taken over by those who administer the Constitution and they could enjoy no response from the public?
It certainly wasn't inevitable. Would not be a secret to our founders that, to use their phrase, medicine's phrase, power is of an encroaching nature. It is a nature of power to always seek more. That part, the government would be disposed to grow. The people who have political power to seek more. No surprises there. But the constitutional system was built with checks and balances that were designed to limit power. What might have been surprise to our founders is the extent to which our elites, people who are charged with safeguarding constitutional values, have forgotten about checks and balances, indeed declared war on them.
You anticipate where we're going. Daniel Mahoney's Tocqueville versus Progressive Democracy. Of course, you did write this, so I understand you're getting ahead of me. When we come back, who is it that who administers the democracy, and what is it that they need to understand about reaction to their opinions? This is CBS Eye on the World, Entertaining Democracy at Election Time. I'm John Batchelor.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.